Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, if you've ever found your tempers on a short fuse when you're hungry, you were feeling hangry. Hunger-induced anger. An Ohio State University researcher who recently made headlines with his study on hangry joins us to explain his findings and what role married couples and voodoo dolls played in his work.
But first, international travel is exciting but can involve added steps of protection that are time-consuming. And we're not even talking about the long lines at TSA, the body scans, and taking off your shoes. When you travel overseas, you have to be up on the latest outbreaks, health concerns, and immunizations necessary to keep you safe. Fortunately, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention compile all the information you'll need in one convenient location, their Travelers Health Tips website.
The CDC website offers specific recommendations for traveling with children, chronic disease, cruise ship passengers, and pregnant women, as well as those just visiting friends and family. Here to explain is Dr. Phyllis Kozarski, professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Disease at Emory University School of Medicine and medical director of TravelWell, a clinic that serves international travelers. She's also a co-founder of the International Society of Travel Medicine and an expert consultant on travelers' health with the CDC. Thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to Take Care.
Thank you.
What are some of the first health-related steps we should take as we think about planning a trip abroad?
I think the first thing is what you mentioned just a minute ago, and that is you might consider going to the CDC website, cdc.gov/travel, and you can click on an area for travelers and put in the destination country or countries that you want. And it will give you an idea of the kinds of health risks that you may face, particularly those that are different from the United States. Based on your physical health, your past medical history, your emotional history, you might decide that those are the places for you, or you might forgo those and change your itinerary plans.
How far in advance should you be looking on the website? Because in some situations, you're going to need immunizations, and you need to leave enough time for all of that.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that people forget about. They go get their passports and all their fancy clothing and forget that health issues are something they need to consider, ideally 4 to 6 weeks in advance. Oftentimes, we end up seeing somebody on the way to the airport, though, and if that's the case, we'll take them. But ideally, as you mentioned, for immunizations to take full effect, 4 to 6 weeks would be ideal.
Now, one of the things that many travelers may think about or they may not think about is that we have a certain type of water system in the United States. It's very safe, very secure. Nothing bad is going to come through the water and cause some difficulties while traveling. How do we know about the water systems in the countries that we may consider visiting? I mean, everybody knows drink bottled water in Mexico, but how do we know if the water is safe to drink?
I think in general, we don't. But we guess and we say in those countries that have challenges to their public health, in those countries that we might consider developing, that it probably is wise to be a little bit more cautious with food and beverages. In other words, drinking water or other beverages that are bottled, sealed cans, pasteurized milk in cartons that are closed, things like that do make a difference rather than drinking from tap water, brushing teeth with tap water. It's always a little iffy, even in deluxe hotels, in cities or in towns where there is inadequate public health can be a problem.
Yes, and I was thinking of friends that have been going on vacations in Caribbean islands that have become more affordable because of these all-inclusives. And while you may just brush your teeth and drink water from the bottle, they may be rinsing the lettuce in, you know, obviously their native water. So how careful do we have to be? Again, as you mentioned, you can be in a luxurious destination. And when you talk about developing countries, I'm guessing you mean if we see that that particular country has a lot of poverty. I mean, we don't do all that much research on what their political situation is. So we're going to a nice hotel. Should we be concerned about how they're washing the lettuce?
I think in general, yes. You know, I think we even know from living in the United States that we're not immune to foodborne illnesses here. There are outbreaks that occur from time to time everywhere. So it's not necessarily the appearance, the outward appearance of a hotel or a restaurant that tells the full story. It's the education and the understanding and the regulations that are in the back in the kitchen that really matter. So there can be contamination at any point along an entire food chain, if you think about it. The lettuce in the ground to the kind of fertilizer, people may be using human fertilizer, and then harvesting those vegetables or fruits, and may be washing them, in fact, with public water systems that are contaminated with sewage. And then they look good and they look fresh and clean, and then they end up on our plate. Somebody may be handling them in the kitchen without using gloves or without washing their hands after using the toilet. So it can be problematic, and that's why, especially if somebody has a sensitive tummy, we might suggest to them eat vegetables that are cooked and steaming. And that is probably a wiser choice than eating a fresh salad, for example, in a restaurant or a place where you have a question about how sanitary the measures are being taken in the kitchen. In general, when you cook something and it's steaming in front of you, that's safer to eat because cooking, boiling, steaming items tend to be more free of bacteria. Whereas cooling something may not kill off bacteria and other organisms. So that's why we say avoid those ice cubes. The ice isn't going to decontaminate or sanitize anything, whereas boiling will. Coffee, tea, things that are brought to almost boiling or boiling temperatures are safe, whereas items that should be cold may have missed the cold chain along the way somewhere. So we're more cautious there.
Lorraine had alluded to the fact that in many places these are luxury hotels or all-inclusives in some countries. And, you know, it's not a classist statement to say that travelers who come into a country are probably considerably more wealthy than the inhabitants. So do they, I mean, and so you'd think that they're in sort of, you know, a protective zone or aura because money does enable them to enjoy things that the inhabitants don't. So what about when there are outbreaks of diseases like polio? We're seeing that more and more in the news. How much I would call it cross-pollination, but that's not the right word. Is that something that a traveler has to worry about if that's in a population that they may not come in contact with?
In general, for illnesses where there is very little crossing between populations or among populations, that's less likely to be a problem. For example, polio. The Ebola or hemorrhagic fevers that are going on now in West Africa. However, that doesn't mean we're immune to problems, and particularly with diseases that are more communicable. For example, there are countless outbreaks of measles, for example, in other countries, including developed countries. Now there's a major outbreak in the Philippines, for example. Americans are going over there to help the situation. They acquire, if they haven't been fully immunized, they acquire measles, come back to the United States, and give measles to other people in the U.S. who are not fully immunized. So it is very, very important not only to look at prevention of quote-unquote exotic or tropical diseases, but also routine kinds of illnesses that we don't think of every day because we don't see them anymore in this country. It's very important to be up to date on routine immunizations, if that means a polio booster as an adult, if that means making sure that you either had measles as a child or have had your two doses of measles vaccine, or you need your chickenpox vaccine. These are very important parts of being prepared to travel, not only to developing countries, but also to other industrialized countries.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Raff.
And we are discussing international travel with Dr. Phyllis Kozarski. She's a professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Emory University School of Medicine, and she's an expert consultant on travelers' health with the CDC. Dr. Kozarski, do we have to worry about medical insurance overseas? Is our medical insurance good overseas, or should we buy additional special coverage?
I think the answer is it depends. Many times, and I would say even most times, our health insurance here at home is not going to be adequate to take care of us overseas. Now, if somebody is very healthy otherwise, is going on a short trip abroad, they may not consider supplementary insurance. But I think for, I want to say older adults because I'm probably considered an older adult, somebody who is an older adult or somebody concerned about any medical history they might have, or somebody with a chronic illness, certainly wants to take that into consideration. Or even if somebody is younger and healthy, if they're going around the world on a trip or going to be a little bit more adventuresome, it is always a good idea to check, number one, with your own health insurance company to see what their limitations are. Number two, to check on other insurance that you may have that you may not realize through, say, a credit card, an upscale credit card that may provide you with some insurance. And then you may want to consider supplementing that with various policies. There are those that cover you for cancellation. Say if you are ready to go, you plan the trip of a lifetime, you've spent tens of thousands of dollars, and all of a sudden you break your leg and you can't go or you have a heart attack. That's important to have that cancellation insurance. Number two, the kind of insurance that covers you or will reimburse you if you see a healthcare provider overseas, because oftentimes they will require dollars or money up front to see somebody or for hospitalization. You want to have coverage for that. The final kind of insurance that's very helful, certainly to a lot of people and a lot more people than previously, is medical evacuation insurance. And people need to think about how much they travel, where they travel to, their health history, and all of that before embarking on that kind of expense. It's not very large, but considering if one is only traveling for a short term to a place that's not very far from them, they may not want to invest in that. But other people find that it's extremely helpful to purchase annual policies for medical evacuation.
What are the essential medicines and first aid supplies we should bring with us? When people ask you that question, what kind of medicines should be packed in that bag no matter where you're going? What's your advice?
First of all, it's great that you say no matter where you're going, because I carry a travel health kit no matter where I am, even if I'm staying in the States. And what I do typically is I take one of those little carts and I walk around up and down the aisles of my favorite pharmacy. And I pull off the shelf anything that I like to have at home in the event I have a minor ailment, whether that's first aid kinds of things, even bandages, a tweezer, whatever, or anything like acetaminophen or Tylenol or aspirin or Advil or Imodium, whatever that is. I don't want to face, even if you're in a country that is English-speaking in the developed world, I don't want to be in my hotel room at 11 o'clock at night wishing I had an antihistamine or saying, darn it, I have a headache. What am I going to do? I would rather have my own. So that's typically what I do, and then I replenish it every time I travel, and I carry it with me wherever I go, and also make sure to take it in your carry-on bag. The most unpleasant thing is having a problem even on an aircraft or somewhere else where you don't have access, immediate access to your luggage, and your medication that you take for whatever is, you know, in the cargo section, and you don't have it and you have a problem. So you want to carry extras of your own prescription medication along with those that you pick up walking around a pharmacy.
Dr. Phyllis Kosarski, professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at Emory University School of Medicine, was our guest. We thank you so much. Dr. Kosarski is also medical director of TravelWell, a clinic that serves international travelers. And she's an expert consultant on travelers' health with the CDC. Thank you so very much.
And thank you, ladies.